We're going to open to a question period, and I'm going to turn it over to Lucy Lewis. Before I do that, I want to mention that there's going to be a similar type of program held Tuesday, February 28th at 7 o'clock in Chapel Hill Town Hall. I also want to tell you that you urge you to get in touch with Congressman Price and urge him to sign on to that Conyers bill. Is that right? And then
there's a copy of it right here, if people want to.
And there may be some more information out in the hall, and that there is a meeting scheduled with Congressman Price on Monday, January 30th at 1:30 p.m. And if you're interested in joining in that meeting with David Price, you can meet at Weaver Street Market at 11:45 to prepare for the 1:30 meeting.
Yes.
Is that right?
Out on Weaver Dairy Road.
You need to put that microphone down towards you.
The meeting's at 1:30 at David's office. It's out by the...
It's Vilcom Center.
Vilcom Center. It's off Weaver Dairy Road where...
Suite 140.
WCHL and all that stuff is out there.
But Monday, January 30th at 1:30 p.m. And if you want to meet to organize for that meeting... It's 11:45 at Weaver Street Market on Monday, January 30th, the same day. Okay. Lucy? Oh, one more thing I'd like to say before we go to questions is I just want to remind people again that if you want to make a contribution to help offset putting on these kinds of events, please make that contribution at the basket at the table in the hall.
Good evening. I'd like to thank our two previous speakers for putting the current crisis of justice and democracy in context, and for those who organized this evening. The next part of our program is to give you, our audience, a chance to speak. We're running a little late, so in order to give as many people as possible a chance to speak, what we'd like to do is ask everybody to make their comments brief. Also, we're doing taping, so we're going to ask folks to come up to the mic here. And in order to expedite that, what we might do is have the next a couple speakers before that line up so that they can quickly go to the mic. We'd be glad to entertain any questions to either of our panelists, any comments that you'd like to make, or any suggestions you'd like to share in terms of how we can act on the information that we've heard this evening. During this period, there's also a sign-up sheet that's circulating. Anybody who'd like to get information about future events like this is encouraged to sign up. Anne, is the petition in the audience right now? The petition is also going around encouraging Congressman Price to sign on as a co-sponsor to the House Resolution 635, which proposes the creation of a select committee to investigate the administration's intent to go to war before congressional authorization, manipulation of pre-war intelligence, encouraging and countenancing torture, retaliation against critics, and making recommendations regarding grounds for possible impeachment. We encourage you to sign that petition if you're not there yet, if you'll pass it on to the person next to you so we can keep it going, so that we can share those signatures with Congressman Price on Monday afternoon. And our first... Good, that means a lot of folks have signed up already. Did you have a question?
Good evening. Thank you for allowing questions. My question is whether we're at war. I know that gets bandied about, but I never heard Congress make any declaration of war, and I don't understand what the legal basis is for using that term.
Constitution is very clear on this subject. It says Congress shall have the power to declare war. And there's a war power group of clauses. And the president is the commander-in-chief once Congress declares war. And the during the debate at the Constitutional Convention, Somebody said something to the effect that we cannot unleash the dogs of war at the command of one person. You need everybody, the whole Congress, to vote on it. So that's the Constitution. Various presidents recently, since Nixon, have said, yeah, but that was before atom bombs. Now that we have atom bombs, we can't afford the luxury of abiding by the Constitution. And so since World War I was maybe the last time we had a formal declaration of war, we had a Tonkin Gulf resolution that got us into the Korean War. Congress did authorize the president to use force to stop whatever. When we went into the Gulf with the father, he asked for Congress to vote on it, and they did. And now the son also got a resolution from Congress authorizing him to use force. And the argument is that's the equivalent of a formal declaration of war. But the Constitution is very clear. Only Congress can declare war. And it seems to be ignored in the breach. And I'd like to say that there are recent disclosures. Documents have been released which show that the two North Korean ships in the Tonkin Gulf really were either not there or they weren't doing anything bad, and we were lied to. Whether Johnson knew it or not, it's clear that we were there by mistake. And if we were lied to in Korea, we were lied to in the Spanish-American War, the main ship, the main, was not blown up by the Spaniard. Yeah. So watch it, that's all.
And just follow up on Dan and Congressman Conyers' resolution. He doesn't say directly that, you know, there was never adequate authorization to go into Iraq. But what he does set up as the very, in very specific terms, is to investigate, you know, whether Bush and Cheney knew when they lied to Congress, you know, about no weapons of mass destruction, the yellow cake, all of John lays it out very clearly to investigate that, because underneath of it, as Dan says in the Tonkin Bay resolution, there was not enough political muscle back then to really go underneath that and find out that that was a fig bar of LBJ's imagination. But here, obviously people very skeptical almost from the very beginning, and certainly when the WMDs were not found. So what, in terms of an impeachment, the way to frame it for impeachment, I believe, is did they knowingly lie to Congress in order to get the resolution? It's not, I would, if I were the DA, that's the way I would approach it. More on a perjury question than on the whether the resolution met the standards in the Constitution.
Jackie?
Thank you. Being a part of the progressive community, I'm used to every time we think something's going on, being told that we're paranoid and that we're conspiracy theorists. But when we look back at all the things that we thought were going on in the 60s, turns out that, by golly, they were, and some of them are even admitting that that was what was going on. I'm having trouble trying to figure out what's going on, and I'm hoping you two gentlemen can help. Why are they, what are they looking for other than just trying to shut people up is my first question. You know, like, I don't believe they're just looking for Al-Qaeda. And my other question is there a connection? You know, recently we found out that they're using search engines to find out what kind of dirty pictures we're looking at. And I kind of think they look at more dirty pictures than we do if you read some of the books that they're writing. But what are they, Do you think there's a connection between the wiretapping and the going into everybody's email and also using the search engines saying that they're looking to see what kind of dirty pictures we're looking at? Is the two are happening so closely together that I can't help but think that there's a connection, or am I just being like a liberal conspiracy theorist? So that's my question.
I don't think even the term conspiracy theorist or whatever is a right-wing term and was developed just like political correctness. And there's these little zingers that people do to put people down who believe there's classes certainly in this country, and there's a very rich class that whether they sit around and talk to each other about what they're planning to do, they certainly have common interests. And they, at least part of them, are funding this present administration. My belief is that from when Nixon got in, when Dan was pointing out, in 69, there was a consensus amongst parts of the white corporate and banking groups that they had to put a stop to all this, the riffraff, getting more rights. And they believed that they had to accumulate and aggregate more power within their own circles. And they saw that both in the executive branch and certainly within the judiciary branch. So they began Rehnquist designed the Federalist Society on one hand, and then designed what now is called the Patriot Act on the other hand, when he was the Assistant Attorney General in 1970-71. And Cheney was in there, and they all worked together on it. So it's not hard to figure out how we got where we are today. I think that they make errors. They overreach when they're reaching in libraries or Google and stuff like that. And I think it's one reason why the honest Republicans, and I think there are a lot, I know in this recent poll, one out of four Republicans is for impeachment right now. And that's only within what, a month and a half, because they have overreached. They really are out of touch with what ordinary people are concerned about.
I'm Alan Eckhouse. I appreciate that the focus of the impeachment effort at this point is on the violation of the FISA Act, and I think that it probably stands the greatest chance of succeeding. It's sort of like getting Al Capone for tax evasion, even though we know his heinous acts. But the mountain of offenses that Bush and Cheney have committed is so enormous we've all become numb. And my alarm trigger, though, went off at something else, and that's the signing statements. For the president to sign bills and then say, I didn't really mean it, that's got to be something terrible, a high crime, a misdemeanor, or what?
Yeah, well, his Alito, of course, signed when he applied for the job in 1985, signed down where it says, I know from representing people that apply for state jobs, when you have signed out in the bottom, it says, everything I'm signing is the absolute truth, and I can be fired if I'm not telling the truth, and I'm signing in good faith and everything like that. Of course, Alito said that was not true at all. Same thing as what Bush is doing. You're absolutely right. I don't think that's mentioned in Conyers' bill.
Maybe it's
about
too recent. Maybe it's too recent to have been put into the bill because it really
he's been
may not be an impeachable offense.
Yeah,
it's offensive though.
Yeah,
it's very offensive.
Right.
Good evening. One of the things I'd like to hear you address is this concept that we've heard about the inherent power that the president has. Where did that come from? Is it just so inherent that we're supposed to know about it? And I guess, are they serious? And was that their fallback position, do you think, if they got caught? Or maybe you could address that a little bit, please.
Well, the president does claim power inherently because he's the president and also because he's the commander-in-chief. And we have Guantanamo because he thinks that he can overrule the Fifth and Sixth Amendments and imprison persons without trial or charge or lawyers. And he thinks that he can take American citizens and lock them in the brig for 4 years and without any explanation whatsoever. And they did, right after 9/11, round up 1,500 Arabs or supposed Arabs. Some of them were Jews, but they were Mideastern and speaking a strange language. And they just held them without charges or anything. And the Department of Justice investigation shows that they were brutalized. And you know, that's not permitted in America, although it goes on. But it's an assertion that presidents like to say, I'm powerful and can do what I please. Well, they can't under the Constitution. We have a separation of powers, which is one of the strongest bulwarks for freedom, which is that you have an independent Congress and an independent president and an independent judiciary. And the president, this president, has been asserting I'm superior to all of them. And just last question, Congress writes a bill, and the committee and the sponsor of the bill says, here's what it means. And then it goes to the president to be vetoed or signed, and the president signs it and says, here's what I think it means, and I'll interpret it the way I read it, not the way that Congress reads it. But Congress is Article 1, Section 1, Congress shall make all laws, not the president. But where does it come from? Bush. Nixon was an imperial president, too. He, like, one time was going to have Swiss guards at the White House, if you recall. Then we had Carter with his button-down sweater, and he walked at the inauguration. The contrary, yeah.
There was a story in The Nation this week talking about the imperial presidency and saying we really need to stop talking about this in terms of monarchy and start talking about it in terms of dictatorship. Other questions? Comments?
Can you kick around this idea of terrorism? I know that there is no legal basis, really, nothing in the law, but I want some ammunition, because, you know, this is what seems to be holding a lot of people back. A definition would be good to start.
I don't know what it is. Certainly not the way they use it. I've been called a terrorist before. Martin Luther King was called a terrorist. The Freedom Movement was called terrorists. So it's in the eye of the beholder. My own feeling is, and I tried to do that a little bit at the beginning of my talk, is that our movement has to talk about reducing fear. Our movement has to challenge this, what psychologists would call this projecting their own terrorism onto people all over the world as terrorists who are basically trying to defend their own lives. And I think we get caught in a trap when we try to say, well, he's not really a terrorist, but he is, and things like that. We're starting to use their language. And I believe the correct language for the democratic movement, that's a small d, is to provide a safe way to grow up for our children and a creative environment for everybody to flourish. That's called taking fear away. And Bush has to be challenged on that framework. But I think it's a mistake to try to define terrorism. I think you're playing with their words.
Can you think of historical precedents where such a similar kind of word or words have been used in the past, and maybe we can learn from
that? Well, Dan was alive, and I was born in 1936. Now, Dan might be able to remember the...
I remember communism.
I remember that during the 80s, seeing a postcard that said, "Can you tell the difference between a freedom fighter and a terrorist?" And to those of us in the Central America Solidarity Movement, the Contra were terrorists. And the Reagan administration called them freedom fighters.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Others?
Is there a case for impeachment of Cheney distinct from the case against Bush? I'm thinking in particular of the outing of the CIA agent's identity, but perhaps there are other things.
I know that certainly the outing of Ms. Plame, Valerie Plame, is in Conyers' resolution. Conyers has two other resolutions. One of them is to censor Cheney. In other words, he has two resolutions to censor, which is kind of his backup arguments. And I think at this point, what the correct way to do it is to lump them together because they are together. And Cheney, in some ways, is more likely to explode than Bush.
Can you go into why you say that?
Why Cheney? Well, some of it is just a gut feeling of his character type. He's tightly wound, and he's older, and he is, more likely to lose it. I think Bush is dumber, and we'll have. He doesn't really know what's going on. They tell him to go out there. They tell him what to say. And you can. And the last few days where they've let him loose, it's just been pathetic. And people have gotten used. People turn him off. They can't stand listening to him. And you can't pin him down. But Cheney, he's very conscious and full of intent on everything he says. So I think he's more likely to. I know when this when the Times put this story out on the FISA violations, Cheney was, they met and Cheney said we got to go on the attack, and that's what they've done ever since. That wasn't Bush. Bush didn't know what to do with it.
Would you say something about what they should be doing in terms of the FISA ruling about getting approval? I mean, I don't quite understand. It seems to me that they would probably win those warrants. And so I don't see why they just don't go through the procedure.
I think there's a little bit of evidence that they might be moving in that direction the last couple of days. They've been talking about it. And that... I don't think it has anything to do with impeachment because for 4 years they've been doing it. You catch somebody committing a crime for 4 years, it will certainly go easier on them. But I think that's why I concentrate on it. I just think it's because they've admitted doing it. And even, their Republican columnist, David Brooks, and what's my boy from Chicago? They're worried about it. The guy's daddy was a philosopher professor.
To answer your question, the president in the last few days have said that if we went to Congress and asked them to amend the FISA law, we would be telling our enemy what is wrong with what we now have and exactly what we want, and they can then take advantage of that information and attack us. So that's the latest. Too bad we can't go to Congress and ask them to do what only they are supposed to do. But if we did the right thing, we would endanger America.
We'll take the last two speakers.
A lot of the actions of the administration have been based upon the concept that we're at war. I wonder whether we can't make a harder press on that definition, because war, by most definitions, is one country against another. And to go to war against an amorphous group of individuals who are loosely connected and who spring up spontaneously all over the world means that it will never end. And if a war never ends, then the state of war, which is the basis of their extraordinary measures, is very hard to defeat. So is there any way we can get some sort of legal redefinition that will rule out the fact that we are at war? Because we aren't.
It's a very difficult problem to get some court or somebody to say we're not at war. It came up in previous wars or escapades or whatever when there's an insurance policy which says that acts of war are exempted. And somebody sues the insurance company and they say we're not at war. And then you go to court and decide whether it war or not. So everybody buy an insurance policy which has an exemption for acts of war and then take it to court. But the courts traditionally will not say whether or not we're at war, because that's for Congress to decide.
I'm Cynthia Green. I'm thrilled to be here because I've been driving around with my impeach Bush bumper sticker for about 6 months. The right is so good at framing their comebacks, and the Democrats just need to get better at it. And how do we empower them or make them feel like they have a spine and they can stand up to these Republicans? Because I've been calling them and saying, and it doesn't seem to do any good. Now, I'm going to continue because I'm mad as hell and not going to take it anymore. But how can we frame, I mean, they've got Fox News out there saying that the Democrats are witless little fools who don't know what the hell's going on.
Only Fox.
Well, I know.
What's the one I called them? ABC, CBS. Right. NBC.
WCHL.
Well, I think that...
One more?
Okay.
What do you got?
I guess in all the discussion on history and definitions and particulars, I want to make sure that we didn't overlook a really important point that Al made, which is that this is the time to act. And I think if we look from the release of the Downing Street memo last spring through the revelation of the wiretapping, et cetera, last month, that the curtain's really been taken off this crowd. And, you know, Al had some statistics on that, that the American people are starting to understand this is election year. Next month, 13th, starts primary season, and this is the time to do something. So my question is not for these guys, it's for everyone here. And it's in light of the fact that Al's going, and I don't know who else is going, Monday, to meet with Price to urge him to support the Conyers bill. But the question is, what happens if he doesn't do that? And the answer is, someone needs to run against Price, and we all need to support that person. So my question to you all is, how many in this audience, if you don't mind showing your hands, will support that candidate should Price not stand up on this? Okay? That's a lot. That's a big start. How many of you all will commit 20 hours between now and May 2nd to working on that campaign? Good number. We need more. How many of you'll contribute $50, $100 to that campaign? Okay, we got to start. We're not taking the names of people raising their hands, so you're not on the hook. But the point is,
Lucy was.
Okay, good. And someone's taping, right? I'm taping me. You should be taping them.
Who's going to report these hands to David on Monday?
That's Al's job. The point is, there's action. You know, we're all activists, and this is going to be a time when we might need to really get in gear in 2006 to make some change on this. And thank you all for doing such a great job.
I think this is a good one to end it on.
Diana?
Hang on just a second.